What? The food? What? 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 What?
I mean, this is an area of history that's just, like, so deep.
And over the baguette.
Themes of empire, mission, inheritance, and destiny. Hello, and welcome to What the Food. This is a podcast that aims to uncover the fascinating origin stories behind dishes from all around the world, both popular and obscure. Andy and I take a dish, and we go right back to the beginning, and we uncover the crazy scenario behind its conception, who created it, why, who killed who, was it an accident, was it on purpose, is there any mysteries? Today, we are taking a look at a topic that I know very, very little about, that creeps me out, makes me feel weird, and that I've never tried before either, and that is jellied eels.
Jellied eels.
No, thank you. Off the bat, no, thank you.
I thought these were one of your favourites.
I thought you're noshing down on these every week, mate.
Yeah, I've seen jars of the stuff in your fridge when I visited.
Jars of it. Just jellied things need to remain in the sweet category of food.
Yeah. I mean, even then, I'm not a massive fan of jelly. I'm not eating jelly on the regs.
Not at all. No. Especially when you fucking know how it's made. I'm sure you'll get into that. But just jelly is a strange concept really. It's a very unnatural food, isn't it, really?
Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, this episode is going to be a fun one. Jelly deals. Have you ever eaten them?
Never have. I've been into places that sell them and just decided not to get them.
What, do you just get pie and mash instead or something?
Just get pie and mash, yeah.
Yeah, with some liquor on the side, whatever it's called.
Liquor, yeah.
Would you ever eat them?
I would. I'm never going to say never. Like, if someone else orders them or something and there's one there, I might just have a little nibble on the edge of it.
Little nibble, yeah.
Get a little feel for what's going on. I mean, the thing is they're popular, massively popular, so there's going to be a reason why people eat them. If they were disgusting, then people just wouldn't have them, would they?
I mean, you say they're massively popular. I don't think anybody else eats jellied eels apart from people in the UK / London.
That are over 50.
Yeah, exactly.
It's true. It's like that Norwegian fermented fish.
Yeah, herring, isn't it? Herring, yeah.
Yeah, and it's like, you know, there's all these like viral videos online of people like cracking open the tin and like the sheer smell of it. It's just making them. Yeah, but some people must love it. They wouldn't manufacture it. They wouldn't fish for it and they wouldn't make it if people weren't buying it. So there's got to be people out there munching down on it on the rain.
Yeah, exactly.
So maybe jellied eels would be nice if I tried them.
Probably not, though.
Probably not.
Yeah, so the best place for us to start with jellied eels is with the actual eels themselves.
Yeah.
On the surface, a freshwater eel is probably one of the most dreariest animals on God's green earth, right? It's basically a slimy tube with eyes, right?
Oh, God. A sea snake.
Yeah, basically. It's a squirmy, like, expressionless hose made up of, like, moist skin and fatty flesh. It's like
none of these words are a positive description for food.
No, exactly. But when you dig a bit deeper into the eel, you actually discover how like incredibly complex they are.
Really?
And how mysterious these slimy little critters actually are.
No way.
Yeah, so as Sir Humphrey Davy, one of the greatest scientists of the 18th century, put it,
"The problem of their generation is they're one of the most obtruse and one of the most curious in natural history."
Mm.
Whoa, that's a bold statement.
Isn't it?
"They're one of the most obtruse and one of the most curious in natural history."
Mm.
So of all of the wondrous creatures on this earth, he's saying that eels are one of the most curious.
One of the most curious, yeah. I think, yeah, the most interesting thing about them is that they've confused mankind since basically the beginning of time. Right. And one of the things that have confused mankind the most is how eels breed.
Right.
So
okay.
How do you think eels breed, Miles?
I was going to guess that it would be in a similar way that snakes breed. But then I don't actually know how snakes breed either.
So snakes lay eggs, don't they? Like reptiles. But fish normally, because obviously eels are fish, and fish normally lay eggs, but they lay eggs in the water in most cases.
Eels don't do that, do they not?
Well, this is what's confused people. like throughout history. So we'll get into some like theories now of how people from history thought eels bred and basically what eels were and what they stood for and all that sort of stuff. We'll start with Aristotle, who was a great Greek philosopher, and he wrote a book called The History of Animals. And in that he wrote,
"The eel is neither male nor female and can engender nothing. Nor was an eel ever found supplied with either milt or spawn, nor are they, when cut open, found to have within them passages for spawn or for eggs." So, what?
So he's saying here that eels have no gender and they have no eggs within them, or no eel was ever found with eggs or spawn. So he goes on to say that eels grow spontaneously in mud and in humid ground. In fact, eels have at times been seen to emerge out of earthworms and on occasion have been rendered visible when earthworms were laid open by either scraping or cutting. So he's saying here that eels are born from earthworms that have been opened up.
What the fuck is that?
Yeah, mate.
What?
Like, this is just like one of the first theories about what eels, the story of eels.
What the fuck? Yeah. Right, okay. So
mate, it gets worse. It gets worse.
Okay, all right.
Yeah, right. Moving on to ancient Rome now, right? So we're in ancient Rome. You've got Pliny the Elder wrote that eels rubbed themselves against rocks upon which the particles they thus scrape from their bodies come to life. That's how he thought eels bred. And
so they shed parts of their bodies that then become new eels.
Basically, yeah, that they find a rock and they scrape up against it, rub up against it, and then that is how more eels are born.
That is how more eels are born. Yeah. This is some alien shit.
Isn't it? This
is absolutely alien shit.
Isn't it?
I mean, the other week, me and Joe watched a Netflix documentary, and it was the octopus one. Have you seen it? It's like the octopus the and one I or something.
Octopus teacher?
That's it. That's the one. Octopus teacher. Yeah. And we just never realised how complex octopuses are. You know, it'd be great to like cover octopus at some point. I know it's like often found in a lot of Asian cuisine, isn't it? But they're such complex creatures. And the more you know, the more you learn about them, the more amazing they are. And it's like, by the end of the documentary, we were like, octopus is alien. There's just like, they are an alien living on this planet. What they can do and how clever they are and the way they can manipulate their body and the way their brains work and just everything about them is absolutely so fascinating. And we just didn't have any idea before the documentary. No.
Proper spooky looking as well, aren't they?
Proper spooky looking. And I'm getting similar vibes from this. Like, some animals just,
Man.
I don't know, they don't seem like they're conceived on this planet.
No. And a lot of them are sea-based.
Yeah.
Just a sea, man. It's just a weird place.
Isn't it? Well, they say that we've discovered more, we know more about space than the sea, don't we?
So,
you know, no wonder we're finding just these incredible, crazy creatures. Mad.
Exactly. But it doesn't stop there. Doesn't stop with Pliny the Elder. We've got, next we've got Oppian, a 2nd century Greco-Roman poet, wrote that eels
rive their moist bodies and from them a fluid-like foam flows and is covered by the sands and the mud receives it and gives birth to the trailing eel. What the fuck?
Mate, people
rive their moist bodies and from them a fluid-like foam flows and is covered by the sands. The mud receives it and conceived and gives birth to the trailing eel.
So I think he's thinking there that they produce some fluid and then that the earth impregnates that fluid. I think that's what he's trying to say.
So this fluid might have microscopic organisms in it, like little tiny, eggs, what do they call them, like parasites or whatever they are. They might be in this foam. And then, like you said, as this foam sort of like seeps through the ground, it might meet something else that then
boosts but the ground isn't going to impregnate fucking eels, is it?
No, but maybe there's some kind of other like mites or some other kind of like microscopic creature in the ground that then
maybe
meets with the microscopic creatures in the foam.
Well, that's not it, but yeah, you can believe that.
I'll take that to the Natural Science Society. My name is Miles, and I've written a 1,400-page paper on my theory of eel consumption. It is thus I conclude the ground itself upon which we find ourselves as humans is what actually impregnates the foam and creates the trailing eel.
Right, and what's going to be on the other 13,999 pages?
That's the intro, and then it's page two. Let me begin.
It's safe to say people are fucking confused about eels, right?
I sure as shit am.
Yeah, and like this confusion continues as well, centuries later, with a guy called Isaac Walton. He provides us with his own idea on the mating rituals of eels in the 17th century. So 17th century now, and we still don't know what they do. So Isaac writes...
And others say that eels, growing old, breed other eels out of the corruption of their own age. Others say that as pearls are made of glutinous dewdrops, which are condensed by the sun's heat in those countries, so eels are bred of a particular dew, falling in the mouths of May or June on the banks of some particular ponds or rivers, apted by nature for that end, which in a few days are, by the sun's heat, turned into eels.
Cheers to that, Isaac.
Isaac, that's a bit of a nutty idea, mate.
Isn't it? So he thinks that eels are bred out of their corruption of their own age, which is
what
cool.
What does cipher mean?
Cool. I don't know, but it's a cool little statement, isn't it?
Yeah. I'm going to use that next time I hate someone.
Yeah.
You, sir, are a corruption of your own age. Now piss off. Okay, perfect. Corruption of their own age.
Yep.
And it's the sun's heat that helps sort of spur on this process, you see.
Exactly, exactly. I mean, even in 1876, so this is like 250 years ago, whatever it is, a young student in Austria called Sigmund Freud, might have heard of him, he dissected hundreds of eels in search of the male sex organ. He had to concede failure in his first major published research paper, and he basically abandoned the subject and turned to others because he was so frustrated with the fact.
He's just like, fuck eels, man.
Yeah, basically.
I'm done.
Basically.
He's like 10,000 eels later, he's got eels cut open all through his lab, and he's just like, yeah, what? This ain't worth it.
Yeah, exactly.
It's stench. Fair play to him. He probably stuck out longer than you or I would.
Yeah. Now, sort of during this period, so we're at like the 19th century now, going into the 20th century, a common theory that people had about eels was that they were viviparous. But it basically means that their young are not hatched from eggs like most fish. Instead, they are born fully formed like mammals.
Okay.
Now, like I said, this was a common theory, and many people believed it, even those that studied natural sciences, like the father of modern taxonomy, Carl Linnaeus. So like you've got proper well-renowned thinkers believing this sort of stuff, but again, it's not right. So if they don't spawn from the earth or emerge from earthworms, like how do eels breed?
Because the thing is, like, this is relatively fucking recent. It's not that long ago that they were struggling to figure this out.
No,
I think at that point in history we probably knew a lot about the nature of most of the world's creatures by then anyway. At least the majority of it. Isn't that long ago, is it?
No, not at all. Not at all. So around this time, sort of the 18th century, early 19th century, no one had actually ever seen European eels mating, laying eggs, or hatching. No one had seen it.
What a mystery.
Reason
they
being?
They just fucking appear, basically.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. So the reason for that is because the European eel has never mated, laid eggs, or hatched anywhere even close to Europe. Instead, they all, without exception, appear to do so in the warm blue waters of Sargassa, of the Sargassa Sea, which is near the Bahamas.
Right.
So from there, billions of larval eels, like tiny, ghostly fucking sinister looking filaments of like transparent like flesh are propelled thousands of miles across the ocean
that just disperse outwards.
Yeah, exactly. And by the time that they arrive on our side of the Atlantic, they've morphed into glass eels, which are like tiny, transparent, more eel-like eels that we know, sort of thing. As they arrive, they dart up into estuaries and make contact with freshwater. So they've obviously just come from the sea and they're going into freshwater now because they're going up the rivers and estuaries and stuff. Yeah. Upon making contact with freshwater, they stop for a second while their respiratory systems adapt to this sort of new type of water, and they just carry on. which is fucking mad if you think about it.
Yeah, because the fish are usually either one or the other, aren't they?
Yeah,
they've
exactly.
either got the biological capabilities to deal with salt water or fresh water.
Yeah, exactly. And these guys just fucking adapt. Stop for a moment and just adapt and just change their whole respiratory system and carry on.
Yeah, that's like us, like, jumping out of a plane and just taking a second in midair to just grow a pair of fucking wings and be like, yeah. Right, sweet.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
That is mad. What the yeah. hell? So yeah. they all are born, they're all from the same spot.
Yeah.
Near the
We're
Bahamas.
All from the same spot near the Bahamas in the Saragossa Sea. Yeah.
What does this spot look like? It's like a little fucking Atlantis eel it's city. Just, yeah. They're all fucking...
Yeah.
There's like a king eel. Like, I send you out, yeah. the new generation of eels. Spread yourselves across the planet and take over. And watch yeah, out for yeah. the shores of London. I've heard they jelly us. They jelly us right good and proper. Be careful.
I think it's just like a really nice place, like right, yeah. like just an eel paradise.
Yeah, so you go for your honeymoon in the Bahamas, and the fucking local guide's like, just watch out that little spot over there. It's, that's where the eels all come from. Every
we
year.
Don't we don't
billions,
go there.
Billions. So don't go in that bit of water. It's fucking horrible. I did it once, and trust me, you'll never want to do it again. Jesus. Right, yeah, so they all fucking come from one place, spread yep. themselves out across the world, mm-hmm. swim up freshwater rivers, adjust.
Mm-hmm. Yep, adjust. Yep, and right. once they can breathe in this new type of water, they keep swimming up river, foraging as they go. You know, in some cases, they can even leave the water to scale, like, dams or, like, clamber over rocks.
Fucking
hell. It's terrifying if you think about it.
Camping by the river, and a fucking little eel starts coming up
pops
at you.
Up.
Oh, mate.
Yeah, mate. So in when they arrive in sort of your bigger rivers and the lakes, they tend to hide in like the thick mud found at the bottom during the day.
Okay.
And then they come out at night and basically feed on whatever they can find. They eat other fish, they eat other eels, they eat ducks, they eat like everything.
What that, is this animal?
Yeah, mate. According to some accounts, they even eat garden vegetables.
My fucking carrot patch.
Yeah.
It's gone. Who's had it? A fucking eels, mate. Who do you think?
Eels fucking beached.
1,000 eels. Yeah. Yeah. Beached themselves and waddled over and fucking ate all my carrots.
Yeah, yeah. I've established a fucking beachhead in my garden. Running little attacks.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, there's a quote that we have from a German theologian called Albert Magnus, wrote this about the eel's feeding habits.
It is said that sometimes by night, to crawl out of the water on the field where it finds lentils, peas and beans.
Right. It's just so, mad, isn't it? It's just mad.
It's fucking lentils. It eats better than me.
Yeah.
These fucking eels. Yeah, that's it. That's fish. A cleaner, leaner fucking diet than I'm on.
Yeah. Lean fish and vegetables. Brilliant.
Lean fish. Yeah, freshwater, lean, organic fish.
Yeah.
Lentils, peas and beans.
Yeah, and sometimes duck. Just throw it in there.
Right. Beautiful. Fucking hell. I need to channel some eel energy going forward. Oh my god,
mate.
I can't believe this. I'm actually, my mind is being blown here.
Mate, it's not even finished yet. It gets worse. It gets madder.
Okay.
So, normally, eels tend to live between 8 and 40 years as well.
What the fuck?
Yep, so they live a long-ass time.
Yeah.
And over that time, they will never stop growing, both in weight and in length. So they never stop growing.
So out there is going to be a fucking absolute gargantuan eel somewhere.
Yeah, that's basically.
Yeah. Yeah, they're not taking the carrot patch anymore. They're taking cities.
Birmingham's down.
Manchester next. Liverpool's currently under siege.
Yeah, they've all planning it out from the place in the Bahamas. It's got like strategic maps and stuff.
Yeah, we won't be jellied anymore. Oh my god, so there's absolutely ginormous eels out there.
Yeah, mate, yeah. So in one story that we have is from a Scottish loch, which was like a particular hotspot for eels in the 18th century.
Okay.
They highlighted that they had eels as big as a horse.
Oh my god.
So big, in fact.
That could eat a human.
Yeah, mate, yeah. So big that they only had one ancient fisherman in the entire region that owned a rod strong enough to fish
some, like, mythical fucking shit.
This is like straight out of like a WoW quest or something. Isn't like it? You've got to go get the ancient rod.
Yeah, go and get the artisan fisher with the ancient rod of seven sons to come and fucking... Oh my god.
Yeah, mate. It's absolutely mad.
So did they get this guy then? Did this guy turn up to get this?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Dealt with it.
Yeah, dealt with it.
And they ate eel for 4 months and
fed the old village.
Yeah. Oh my god.
Yeah, mate. So as they get bigger as well, they also tend to change colour.
Okay.
So they start from like a glassy, sort of see-through, silvery colour, and then they go to sort of a more yellowy, browny colour. Right. Which is a bit more grim. But then again, they change again as they continue to get older and go back to sort of a more silvery colour.
Is that the one that sort of I'm used to seeing, the sort of like bluey silvery?
Mate, they are mad. They're absolutely mad. And it doesn't stop there, right?
Right.
So suddenly, on a dark autumnal night when the moon is in its last quarter, a switch deep inside the eel is flicked. The switch causes the eel to charge back downriver towards the sea,
right,
in a surge of like slick, like writhing flesh. Mature eels come pouring out of the lakes, rivers, estuaries, back into the sea, stopping only to again readapt to the new type of water.
Right, and this is because of the sun's.
So the moon is in its last quarter. We don't know why this happens. Okay. We just know that it happens on some night in autumn when the moon is in its last quarter. Just something deep within the eels just changes, and instead of going upriver, they just turn back around and come back downriver and go back out to the sea. They continue to charge, finding their way across the Atlantic, right back to the Saragossa Sea, the place where it all began.
So King Eel is altering the moon to send out a signal to bring his army back to the city of eels.
Yeah, yeah. Reinforce the homeland. Come back.
Come back. Bring with us the knowledge you've got from the world.
Yeah.
Mate, there's a conspiracy happening here.
Along the way back, their sexual organs have developed, and upon arrival, so that's why no one ever, you know, when they were cutting open eels and they never found any sexual organs.
Because they're not
organs
at that stage yet.
They've not developed it because they've not had the call to go back.
Whoa. Right, okay. So on their way back, they're developing these sex organs.
Yeah. And upon arrival, they mate for the first and only time. And once they are done mating, they die. That's it.
Whoa. So this is by far one of the weirdest creatures I've ever fucking heard about. What other creature has like one HQ in a really weird niche part of the world that then... What?
Yeah, mate. Oh, absolutely wild.
And then they die after they mate.
Yeah.
I guess the new generation then's born and just follow the same process.
Yeah, exactly.
Whoa.
I was absolutely speechless when I read all this. Like, we only discovered this whole thing in like 1922 as well.
Yeah.
So like 100 years ago, next year... We discovered about eels.
Yeah. That is absolutely bizarre, isn't it? Nutty. That is so weird.
So, and the way that it was sort of discovered was a Danish researcher called Johan Schmidt.
Johan Schmidt.
He basically caught increasingly smaller eels as he got close to the area in which they reproduced.
Okay.
So he basically, like, I don't know, 200 miles away from the Bahamas caught... Yeah. A medium-sized eel, got closer to the place in the Bahamas, caught a smaller eel, small, until they found.
Oh, so he's using the size difference to actually, like, circumnavigate to where they are. Mm, that's clever.
1922, 100 years ago.
That, like, recent history, essentially.
Yeah, basically.
Whoa.
Basically. Fucking absolutely hell. Bizarre, right?
That, mate, absolutely. It doesn't make me want to eat them anymore, that's for sure.
Fascinating.
Doesn't make me think, like, let's eat this weird thing.
Do you not? It's more like tropical now, isn't it? It's like Bahamas, like, Caribbean, jerk eel.
No, I'm just seeing this jerk eel. No, I'm just seeing this alien sea snake jumping onto land and eating things.
Fucking
and
climbing your house to get your peas.
Yeah, it's in the fucking freezer. Get my frozen peas.
Getting your bears
again,
peas.
Love. Oh, mate, that is actually blowing my mind. Crazy.
Yeah, mate. Yep. Yeah. So now we've gotten to the bottom of one of nature's most curious mysteries. Hmm. Let's dive into when we actually started eating the slimy things, yeah?
Yeah.
So the annual arrival of eels to Europe basically shaped our relationship with it as a foodstuff. You know, you'd get like heaps of worm-like eels appearing in lakes, rivers, estuaries that could be super easily caught with like a decent net, really. You know, locals.
Well, because there's going to be so many of the fuckers. Exactly, you throw a net in, drag it along, and you're going to catch a bunch of them.
Yeah, exactly. And there's so many trying to get up like sort of narrow rivers that they all just pile on top of each other, and you could, like, locals would just like scoop up their catch.
Yeah.
You know, they'd scoop it up in great numbers and take their eels home to cook and eat just as they would any old fish that they came across.
Yeah.
You know, some people, however, did experiment with their method of cooking eels. Another quote that we have from Isaac Walton, who was like an English writer. He lived from 1593 to 1683, and he wrote the following.
About a set time in summer, such small eels abound so much that many of the poorer sorts of people that inhabit near to it take such eels out of this mere with sieves or sheets and make a king of eel cake of them and eat it like it's bread. Eel cake. Anyone want to come to my house for eel cake?
Eel cake. That's definitely another thing for the What the Food restaurant.
Eel cake. Faux show. Yeah. That's on the pudding menu. Yeah.
So yeah, people are experimenting. They're not just cooking them in the oven or frying them. Yeah, exactly. They're making cake.
Yeah, and they eat it like it's bread.
Oh god. Yeah, just peeling off bits of cake with eel mixed through it.
Oh my god. I would rather not eat.
No, yeah, I'd rather go hungry. Now, if you remember, we spoke about how sort of the eels change colour as they age. Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. They go a bit like a pepper. Like,
yes, I suppose so, yeah.
Because I only figured this out the other day, and this I'm ashamed to say. Different coloured peppers, they're just peppers that are different parts of their growing cycle.
Like a green pepper is just a young red pepper.
Yeah. And it goes between, I think it goes green, then goes to yellow, then finally turns red.
Yeah.
And it just depends what colour you get is when you pick it.
Mm-hmm.
Never knew that.
Blew your mind that, didn't it?
Did, yeah.
Some people don't like green peppers, but like red peppers, which I think is, I don't know.
Well, they go a bit sweeter, don't they? The red ones are sweeter.
Yeah.
They've had more time to sort of,
Massively, though.
Not massively, but there's definitely a definite switch in flavour. Mm. But if you like a pepper, you're probably going to like all three, aren't you?
Yeah, exactly.
It's not that much difference between them.
No. Anyway, like peppers, eels change colour as they age. They go from like a glassy sort of see-through colour when they're young to a more yellowy-brown colour, and then they turn silver as they get older. Some countries, like Spain, enjoy the smaller, more delicate, like glass eels, whilst others, like the Italians, enjoy the fatter, silver eels, you know, once they've gone upriver and fed and on the way back to where it all began. That's where they like them.
They're quite fleshy little buggers, aren't they? Like, you can basically eat most of it. It's almost like a sausage. You don't have to cut around sections of a sausage. You know what I mean, though? Like, what I'm saying,
you
can just pick up a sausage and bite it and eat it. And I feel like eels are kind of the sausage of the fish world.
Oh, like, just imagining like four little sausage eels on your plate with beans and chips
in between a fucking bun with some ketchup and mustard on it. Oh,
gosh. Well, luckily for the Europeans, the sweet and energy-filled flesh that you were just speaking about of eels could be enjoyed all year round. You know, they were incredibly easy to catch due to them being, you know, like buried in the mud during the day. They didn't really come out in the day, and super easy to catch, and they were everywhere. So, you know, they quickly became a popular food item.
Breakfast, lunch, dinner, all year round. What's for dinner tonight, Mum? Eels, what do you think?
Eel lasagna. So a fun little story about catching eels before we move on. Mm-hmm. According to Oppian, the Greco-Roman poet, he writes in one of his works, some youths in havens of the sea beyond the wash of the waves would just for the laugh fish for eels, using nothing but a length of sheep gut dangled in the water.
Some youths. Some youths. what else does he say as well? To entertain themselves.
So just for a laugh. Just fish for eels using nothing but a length of sheep gut dangled in the water. So what would happen is when an eel latched onto the sheep gut, the youth would inflate it like a balloon by blowing as hard as possible on the other end. And yeah. as the gut sort of swells up and balloons up, it fills the straining mouth of the eel. And basically the eel is completely unable to escape and it swims to the surface.
Oh,
and
the
youth can just grab it.
These the kids of the time are doing this shit.
Yeah, mate, there's no Fortnite back then. You know, it's what people fucking did for shits and gigs.
Do you guys want to come out and get some eels with the sheep intestine? Yeah, come on, let's go. What time will you be home for dinner? I'm not sure, Mum. I'm just going out with to get the eels with the sheep intestine.
I'll get dinner out.
I'll just eat an eel. See ya.
So, if you think about this, not only do you have to hold a sheep gut, firstly, you have to acquire a sheep gut, which, I don't know, might have been easier back then to get, but I wouldn't know where to get a sheep gut nowadays.
No.
You then have to put one end of the sheep gut near your mouth.
Yep.
And then you have to blow into it. And then you have to wait for the eel to come up. And then you have to grab it with a hand or a net, I suppose. You could use a net. This is a grim activity all round.
An all round horrendous thing to do with your spare time.
Exactly.
Go and read a book.
Yeah. And it's not like at the end of the day, you've got this delicious catch as well. At the end, you've still caught an eel.
An eel after all that.
Yeah.
Yeah. But they weren't doing it for food, were they? They were just doing it for fun. That's them just having a laugh.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, God. Imagine like seeing a bunch of kids doing that nowadays. You'd be like, absolute psychopaths. These kids need to go to an asylum.
I can see a river from my window as well. So imagine me looking out and they're all just
in a little raft, dangling sheep cuts, blowing in them. Yeah. I reckon there's probably eels in that, you know.
Maybe.
I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah.
Mm. Go get one.
No, you're right.
I'm good,
thanks.
Get live on the episode, you're just like, I fucking got one, mate.
Wrestling with an eel.
He's a slimy bugger. No, thankfully you're not.
Later in the, as this podcast hopefully grows, we'll do a live fishing podcast where we'll be fishing as we're recording the podcast.
Yeah. Welcome guys to What the Foo. We're just out here on the raft of this Yorkshire River. Who knows?
Anyway, yeah, so back to sort of eating eels now. So in Greece, eels were actually a delicacy. Mm-hmm. They were served mainly at weddings and sort of grand feasts. Like, they were seen as like a top tier food, basically.
When I'm getting married, I'm not eating fucking eels.
In Egypt, they also loved eels. They loved eels to the point where they believed one of their gods, Autumn, was reincarnated as an eel.
I swear they did that with every animal. I was reading a book the other day that was talking about an alligator that they started thinking was a god. So they dressed the alligator in like gold and chains, and then like a couple of weeks later it died. And they just got a new alligator. They were like, this is the new alligator king.
This is the new god.
That's fair. They just loved taking animals and saying they were gods. Yeah.
But because of the fact that they thought it was a god, you know, they treated them in both life and death with the utmost respect. And thought they were sacred to the Nile. Mm. Fun little bit of banter between the Greeks and the Egyptians. A Greek poet Anaxandrides writes,
"You do think an eel the mightiest of deities, but we do eat him as the best of fish."
I ate your deity, bro. What you gonna do about it, bro?
You say he's God. I eat it. So yeah, he's literally saying that, isn't he?
Yeah.
You think the eel is the mightiest of deities, but we do eat him as the best of fish.
So the Greeks, the Egyptians love eels. When it comes to ancient Rome, however, the feeling is a bit more mixed. Yeah. I think this is when we start to see people actually develop a fucking palate, to be honest.
Yeah. Coming out of the dark age of culinary.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly, yeah. So some thought the eel was an unwholesome breed, and many Roman recipes that have survived that included eel basically had other elements to make the eel more palatable.
Right.
There was rarely like a recipe which was, here is a fried eel, just eat it as is. It was always mix it with olive oil and you know, shit like that.
It is interesting, like, how over time, certain dishes that in the past used to be, like, absolute staples just somehow fall into a category of, like, stuff that's not seen as ethical to eat. Maybe not ethical, but just not seen as, like, the right thing to eat. You know, we wouldn't eat rats, but there's certain places in the world where rats are still kind of like a street food and still kind of consumed on the reg. But it is, like, a fascinating concept, isn't it, how the trends of what foods and what animals are right to eat
changes. Right now, it seems like changes, the eels are going through that process of going from something that's normal to eat into that category of like, that's a bit dirty to eat that kind of food.
Yeah. I wonder if it's maybe not ethical.
Yeah, it's the wrong
maybe
word.
Maybe just people's change.
Yeah.
People's taste change. But yeah, I think also sort of during the Roman times, you've got a lot more trade as well.
Right.
So then they would have been introduced to a lot more...
choice.
Different, yeah, a lot more choice. Mm. And obviously with choice, why are you eating eel over
a salmon?
I don't know, trout.
Yeah.
Yeah, or a salmon. Yeah, exactly. You just wouldn't, would you?
Yeah.
But yeah, so as you can see, in general, with the exceptions of some of the population of Rome, you know, the people of Europe like eating eels.
Yeah.
You know, they're readily available. They're easy to catch. Let's fucking eat them.
Yeah.
What about the English?
Well,
the English love a good eel. They love it. Baked in a pie, roasted, boiled, stewed, spatchcocked. Whatever method you want to use, an Englishman would eat the shit out of it.
Don't know why.
I don't know.
I thought we were fucking weird folk. Distinguished gentlemen and ladies.
Yeah, we've just got no palate, do we?
Yeah. I don't know why I'm acting surprised. Yeah.
So England was actually described by the Venerable Bede himself, shout out to my main man, my homie, as the land with the greatest plenty of eels.
Great. We're blessed.
Mm. Cheers, Bede.
Oh, that missed, is that St. Bede?
Yeah, shout out. Yeah,
oh,
yeah,
that went
out.
Over my head there for main a second.
Man. Did it?
Yeah, we went to... St. Bede's secondary school, didn't we?
Yeah, we did, yeah.
Old St. Bede himself. What was he a saint? He was made a saint because he was the first person to transcribe the Bible, wasn't he, into English or something like that.
So that people could read it.
Yeah, made a saint because he's sharing the word of the Lord.
But, I mean, this is, you know, this is like 7th century now, I think. Yeah. Bede was right in 6th or 7th century. But obviously during his time, you know, eels were abundant in England.
Yeah.
So abundant, in fact, that eels were sometimes used as a medium of exchange. Ooh. On this lovely island we call home.
What, like a, you know, a currency?
Yeah, yeah. So as early as the 7th century, we have evidence that Ian, the Saxon king of Wessex, demanded hundreds of eels be paid as rent for his subjects.
Right, okay.
And around 300 years later, the book Ely Farming Memoranda describes a plot of land as being bought for 26,275 eels.
Oh my God.
Just imagine how that whole exchange went.
Yeah. Is it like horses and carts that pull up with like fucking thousands of eels in the back?
Yeah. I'm imagining like an old timey like boardroom. Like a guy walks in with like a briefcase full of eels.
Yeah.
You got the goods, John Round. For you, yeah. Count them up, make sure he's not light.
You know, like in a Tarantino film where the suitcase comes up and you just see their reaction, it's the gold that's shining in their face.
But instead, it's
the same angle, but they open the briefcase and it's just fucking eels flying out every
flashing
angle.
About. Big smile.
Slapping them in the face.
Just grinning.
You don't see in it, you just see him like. Oh, but the thing is, they didn't really have the same level of like refrigeration back then and ways to store food. Whenever you're getting this much food in one go, this many eels delivered, like how the fuck are you storing that? You got to fucking hire like an eel keeper whose like job it is to 24/7 just like take care of the eels. Yeah, wouldn't know where to start.
Yeah, wouldn't know where to start.
I wouldn't know where to start nowadays with all the modern technology. No, let alone
I wouldn't know how to keep an eel.
Let alone how many? Did they trade for the rent?
For the rent, it just says hundreds of eels be paid. But for this plot of land, it's 26,275 eels.
26,000.
That's a lot, isn't it? That's a lot of eels.
A lot.
Don't even know what to do with that.
That's what I'm saying. What do you fucking do with that? Just put me in the garden for a bit. I don't know.
Not near the carrot patch, though. Yeah, I'll eat the fucking thing.
Yeah. Where's the dog? Have you seen the dog? I haven't seen the dog for a few days.
It's been eaten by the eels. Yeah. It's been eaten by 26,000
eels. The other thing that reminded me of eels when we said we were going to do this episode was the fucking Lemony Snicket thing. There's like a scene, isn't it, where there's they go and live with their auntie or something, and she lives right on the coast, and the eels in the sea are like flesh-eating eels, and at one point they have to get in a little rowboat and go through, and there's these fucking eels biting, and it just reminded me of that. That was my, going into this, that was just my...
That was your reference point.
That was my reference point of eels. Lemony Snicket's a series of unfortunate events. Yeah. And it turns out that they're weirder than that anyway.
Yeah, much weirder.
Yeah.
Much weirder. But despite all this, there is one group of people in England that's desire to eat these slimy little buggers is more than anyone else's. So there's one group in England. Mm. Any idea what I'm talking about? Any idea which group I'm talking about? Let me give you a clue. Yeah. Let me give you a clue. Right. Oi, mate, last night I was sitting on my lion's lair while smoking an oily rag when me ranking riches broke. I had to duck and dive before any bottle stopper saw me.
Ooh. I'm going to say like a little London gangster.
Yeah, it's Cockney, mate.
Cockney, London.
Cockney.
Guy, yeah. Just Cockneys, man. Not gangster, just Cockneys.
Just Cockneys, yeah. They're not all gangsters, don't
they? They sound like gangsters, though, but they're not.
Took me ages to write that sentence. I spent like ages trying to practice it as well. It's just not conducive to like how to speak.
No, not at all.
So what I said there was, oi mate, last night I was sitting on my lion's lair, which is chair, while smoking an oily rag, which is a fag, when me rank and riches broke, which is trousers.
Oh, right, okay.
Britches. I had to duck and dive, hide, before any bottle and stopper saw me, copper.
Right, Cockney rhyme.
Yeah.
So the fucking Cockneys, whilst rhyming, were also chowing down on thousands of eels.
Thousands of eels, 26,000, yeah.
You want something.
So, it's the Cockneys. So in 1854, David Badham, a doctor and essayist, which is a cool little title. I mean, I wrote essays in uni. Does that make me
an essayist? Me too.
Yeah, some of the CV, that. described London as a city full of street traders selling large quantities of stewed eels to the working class. He writes,
London, from one end to the other, teems with steams of eels, alive and stewed. Turn where you will, hot eels everywhere, smoking away, with many a fragrant condiment at hand to make what in itself palatable, yet more savoury. Many fill their stomachs with six or seven long pieces and wash them down with a cupful of gluttonous liquor in which they have been stewed.
I'm so glad I didn't live in this time.
It just seems like the worst time to live in this area of the world.
But I think this quote's really good, that it shows that they were so popular in London. You know, they were absolutely everywhere. It's like hot dog stands, basically, in New York.
Yeah.
That's how I envisage it. So
that's what you're saying, isn't it? Everywhere you turn, hot eels everywhere, smoking away. Many different condiments, fragrant condiments to make with it. So that's the thing, like when you can have, I've not had eels, but I'm going to guess that they're quite a blank canvas. I think they can take on a lot of flavour of whatever you add to them. I think that's probably going to be why a lot of these people are choosing different fragrance and different condiments and different things to have with it.
Yeah.
To change it up a bit.
Yeah, exactly. Mm. Exactly. Here we are, really. So this cup full of gluttonous liquor in which the eels are stewed, is the basis for jellied eels.
Right.
So when it's left to cool, this liquor, thanks to the fish's gelatinous protein, forms an intensely flavoured jelly that, to the horror of the rest of the world, took London by storm.
So it's gelatinous because of the natural...
proteins, yeah.
Gelatinous proteins that emanate from the fish.
Exactly, yeah. So it's not like... you know, like your raspberry jelly where you have to put in gelatin.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's basically got a large amount of natural proteins, which proteins found within the eels congeal. Mm-hmm. So you form like a more gelatinous bond than even like gelatin.
Right.
Could achieve.
Because I think like nowadays I think it's a combination, because there was that Vice documentary about one of the pie and mash places that does eels, and the guy, I think he did put in some additional.
So we'll get to why I did that.
Okay.
Yeah. So during this time, you know, eels are still very abundant. Right. They, you know, they're cheap, they're nutritious, and there was thousands of them swimming around the Thames, which was one of the reasons why they were so popular to Cockneys and Londoners. Cheap, nutritious, you get them anywhere, and they were swimming everywhere.
Yeah.
You know, in the Thames. Shopkeepers across London's East End prepared the working class's favourite by chopping and boiling eels with vinegar, sliced onion, peppercorns, bay leaves and salt. As the mixture cooled, the eel's gelatinous protein solidified into a savoury jelly surrounding the meat. The diners would then douse this concoction in like hot chilli vinegar or served it alongside pie and mash covered in a parsley liquor.
Right.
Now, I've never eaten jellied eel. And I have no appointments to eat one, but I've heard they taste like pickled herring, which is what you said in the beginning.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can imagine.
Which again, I've never eaten that, and I have no plans to. But no. I don't understand why you would take a lovely hot pie with steamy mashed potato and a well nice parsley sauce and just slap a load of cold jellied eels on there.
It just doesn't seem like it would go, does it?
Like, no, I thought, like, it obviously doesn't, I thought it might be like a texture thing.
Yeah.
But I've never once been eating a pie and thought, you know what this could do with fucking more jelly texture.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, the thing is, these pies that they're serving, I mean, I've been into some of these. There was one in Greenwich that I went to that was really nice, and it had been there for 100 years or so, this place. And I had a pie. It was just a beef pie, and it's like minced beef and mash, and then the liquor, the parsley liquor. Mm-hmm. But the thing is, like, the pie is very meaty, and obviously you've got that rich, like, because it's got, like, that gravy inside the pie, and then you've got the mash, which is really nice. And then you can imagine that, like, a sort of salty, savoury dish like that could be accompanied with something that's a bit sharper between mouthfuls, which could be the eels. But the counter argument to that is that the parsley sauce is a bit tangy, and that's what gives you the sort of cut through of the meat richness from the sauce. So you don't need the eels. The eels actually then don't have a purpose when you've got the parsley sauce on there already. So that's what confused me, because if it was all, you know, if you were having a pie mash and then more rich gravy on it, then I could see maybe a place for the eels. It really doesn't make much sense.
But then they also put vinegar on the eels themselves, didn't they? They also put like hot chili vinegar.
Yeah.
So
it just sounds like they're trying to mask the flavour of it.
Yeah.
Like everything is just to like go as far away from the flavour of the eels as possible.
Exactly. Exactly.
Which isn't a good
like,
sign.
The jelly found in like pork pie is the worst bit sometimes. If you get a cheap pork pie, it's the worst bit. Imagine, right? You've got a pork pie on a plate, and just before tuck it in, you just slap a load more jelly on the top of it.
You buy pies and then you buy a tub of jelly. And you add it yourself as you eat. Yeah, you just wouldn't do that, would you?
Nah, you'd never do that. That's absolutely grim.
No, yeah. But then I think like actual really traditional homemade pork pies, like the one we had when I visited you in York, when it's made with like, you know, a high percentage of pork meat, the fat was just in and amongst the meat naturally. It was just naturally. You know, the natural meat fats. It didn't have the jelly in there, I don't think. It didn't need it, it didn't miss it.
No, it really didn't need it, did it? Yeah, so the earliest known eel, pie and mash houses opened up in London in the 18th century, and the oldest surviving shop is M. Mansay, which opened up in 1902.
Wow.
So, yeah, old.
120 years old.
Yeah. So the founder of the shop, Michel Mansay, arrived in Britain from a picturesque hillside village called Ravello in southern Italy.
Why have you done that?
Exactly, yeah.
Why have you done that?
Southern Italy to London in the 18th century.
To sell
why
eels.
Have you done that? Yeah.
Yeah, you could have been flogging like fresh tomatoes in the Italian hills.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, I mean, he was just 3 years old when his family made the trek, so he didn't really get a fucking say in the matter.
Make better decisions when you're three. Oh, okay, fair enough. That'd have been a good enough reason, I'm sure.
Yeah, exactly. And like when they arrived, so the Manzo family settled in Bermondsey.
Oh, yeah.
And began trading as ice merchants, turning to ice cream makers. But realising the need for a more substantial food in post-Victorian London, Michel branched out into pie, mash and eels trade. Like, I think it got really big. I think at one point they had around 14 shops selling pie, mash and eels.
So they franchised out then?
Yeah, yeah. Now, I'd like you to read the intro blurb found on the Mansay website for us, please, Miles.
M. Mansay Pie and Mash needs no introduction. Our mouth-watering pies, mash, green liquor and eels are legendary and uphold the tradition of excellence established by our founder, Michel Mansay, more than a century ago. Today, we offer all of our handcrafted traditional English dishes for delivery. If you are outside the London area, we provide chilled delivery to anywhere in the UK. That's anywhere in the UK. So, if you've been pining for world-class pie and mash but haven't been able to get to the capital to enjoy it in person, we'll bring it to you. In minutes, you'll be enjoying the unparalleled flavour experience that has wowed Londoners since before the Great War.
Wow.
Wow.
Copywriter's done a cracking job trying to sell eels there, hasn't he?
Yeah. Well, they don't even mention eels there in that.
Green liquor and eels are legendary.
Oh, shit, yeah.
First bit.
Oh, yeah, there is. Because I was going to say, like, they're definitely pushing the pie and mash more, aren't they?
Mm.
But they deliver anywhere in the UK. I'm going to...
Oh, Miles?
Hello?
Got a little surprise for you.
Oh, yeah.
Go and open the front door.
1 second.
I've ordered you 10 portions of jellied eels and 11 portions of stewed eels.
I'm okay, thanks. Dealt with.
Well.
I said no. I turned him away.
Cost me like £60 that.
Andy, if I'm going to stoop to the level of trying eels, I'm going to do it when it's fresh and when I'm there. I'm not getting that shit delivered. It's not going to travel well, is it? Do you know what I mean? Like, if I'm going to do it, I'm going to do it. I'm not going to fucking get an Uber driver to come and deliver me fucking jellied eels. Sat in the back of his little moped box for 45 minutes. Warming up.
You could taste them live on the podcast and review them for us.
Oh, God. Yeah. I think not. Maybe that's something we could do. Maybe we could try certain dishes on a live stream at some point. That'd be quite cool.
Yeah, it would be quite cool. You can try the eels.
Okay, yep, you get the pie and mash, I'll get the eels. But yeah, that'd be quite a good idea. Doing like a live stream show where we eat a lot of the dishes that we've covered and talk about it. Let us know what you think. We've got a new email address that you can write in and tell us what you think or just say hello. It's whatthefoodpodcast@gmail.com. So hit us up and let us know what foods you would like to see us vomit whilst eating.
Mm. Yep, beautiful.
But yeah, no, if I'm going to eat jellied eels, I'm going to eat them right in the restaurant.
Yeah, you want it freshly cooled down, don't you?
Yes. That's if freshly... I get to the point where I'm going to eat them at all.
Yeah. Which you will. Anyway.
I'm going to force you, so you will.
People just didn't eat jellied eels with pies, though. You know, they were often eaten by themselves too.
Mm. You get a little toothpick and
yeah. They were actually seen as like a great easy to eat on the go snack that you would wolf down on the way in from the pub.
Oh God!
Like an original kebab.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, hun, do you want to go for a romantic walk along the Thames? We'll get a little bit of jellied eels each. I don't know. That conversation has happened before though.
Yeah. Many times. 100%.
That's not the flavour you want when you're drunk.
The flavour or the texture.
None of it.
Just none of it.
Like, there's a reason why you want something. Like, I don't know, when you drink, you just crave, like, meaty things. That's why doner kebabs and kebabs in general and stuff like that's popular. But fish. I don't know if fish really hits that spot when you're drunk.
Never. Like, I mean, maybe it's just a case of working with what you got. Like, you know, during the time there wasn't fucking shawarma knocking about.
No.
Like, you couldn't get cheesy chips at this point. Maybe that was the only thing that was available to people, which is a sorry state of affairs.
Isn't it? That bitch should have stayed in Italy.
Yeah, so centuries later, rationing during World War II caused a peak in jellied eel popularity. Mm. By the end of the war, London alone boasted more than 100 eel and pie shops, which is mad.
But everywhere you went, you just smell eels.
Just eels.
You just can't
everywhere.
Get away from it. No. Going to work, taking your kids to the park, off out to the shops, just eels. Eels, eels, eels.
Eels. But unfortunately, in the subsequent decade, Londoners began to lose interest. Mm-hmm. And as supply waned, they fell out of love with the eel. So now we're going to get into like a bit of a full circle type thing.
Okay.
Supply waned, right? Mm-hmm. Why did supply wane? Because the Thames became more polluted.
They were getting them from the Thames, weren't they?
Yeah.
It's not the cleanest river known to man.
It's not the cleanest river. No, it's not. In fact, in 1957, the Natural History Museum declared the Thames River biologically dead.
Let's get our fish from the dead water.
Yeah. And you had newspapers calling it a badly managed open sewer.
I've got an eel. Oh no, that's just a turd. Shit. Put it back. That's not an eel.
Probably tastes better, to be fair.
Yeah. No, but like, yeah, they could have come up across that problem.
Yeah, no, 100%. 100%. So, yeah, the Thames is in a bad shape, right?
Yeah.
It's heavily polluted, dirty as fuck, and eels do not cope well at all with filth.
They're not.
No, even Aristotle wrote of the eel's love for perfectly clear water.
Well, see, I never knew that. I thought that they, you know, my preconceived idea of them was that they were kind of like dirty animals and that they kind of lived in dirty places, but... No, they're quite picky little buggers.
Mm. Yeah, they do not do well with filth. So, you know, it's likely that the Industrial Revolution and the increasing pollution produced by the peoples of London basically killed off one of their favourite foods.
Right, yeah, drove them away, basically.
Yeah, basically.
Mm, I wonder if COVID has had any impact on the population of eels in the Thames.
I think it's actually better, I think, the Thames now.
It sounds like a lot pollution. Yeah, they've done done a lot with it, I think, to make it better.
Yeah, yeah. So with
we can have eels again. Woo! Bring them all back. Bring them all back.
So yeah, with the lower supply of eels around, some shopkeepers tried to keep the tradition alive by serving basically whatever eels they could find.
That doesn't sound good.
No.
Found one here. Where was that? It was just in under the stairs. Yeah. All right, we'll have that then.
We'll have that, yeah. Which I think is why, you know, you said earlier about on that Vice documentary, he was adding in more
gelatin.
Yeah. Which is maybe why they're having to do that, because the eels aren't as fat, because they don't live as long, or they're getting like non-European eels in from God knows where else.
They're importing them. Yeah.
And they're not as fat and they're not as protein rich, maybe.
Well, they're not giving off as much of that, that natural gelatinous proteins.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, fair enough. So he's sort of substituting it in.
So, I mean, we still have eels, you know, knocking around, but like the population is fluctuated ever since around the 1950s. But the Thames isn't expected to return to its once infested state of glory ever. It will never get to how it was before.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the eel population has declined so much that eels simply don't find their way here anymore. They just don't.
Fuck that. I'm not going back.
They just don't get it. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, in fact, over the past few decades, the European eel population has fallen by an incredible 95%.
Whoa, the European eel population.
95%.
So where are they going now?
Well, this is it. We've gone full circle, haven't we?
Yeah.
We've gone from wondering where the eels are coming from to where the eels have gone.
Yeah. we just do some trip to like Nigeria or somewhere, and there's just like a community there that are absolutely ravaged by all the world's eels that just constantly go there. Just like, oops, that was our fault. So they're just we do
poor village.
Just
decimated by eels. Yeah. All the crops have just been eaten by eels. Not all a drought or like intense rainfall, just a plague of eels.
All of Europe's eel population descended upon them in 1984. So we not know? We don't really know where the ones that used to come to Europe now are.
No, man. It's
or is that just the general population of eels has just gone down and there's not as many of them knocking around?
Just the general population of eels,
right?
Yeah, exactly.
It's not that there's the same amount, but just they don't come here anymore.
No. Well, they might be going somewhere else. The population might. We don't know. The population might still be there, but they don't come here anymore. I think we would have heard about that though. Maybe
that's fine. Yeah, exactly. It'd be in the news, wouldn't it? But to be honest, like wherever they're going, that's fine with me. They can
that's
go
fine.
There. You can have them, guys. They're yours.
It's just strange how like almost a century after finally uncovering the truth about eels and their extraordinary lives, that these dull, fucking slimy critters.
Sea sausages,
yeah. these slimy sea sausages may well be on the verge of disappearing forever. Yeah. Almost as though like they know we know about their shit. And are now like hiding.
Yeah. They're waiting till the next mass extinction, like the next dinosaur scale.
Yeah, ice age,
and then they just pop back out, and they're another mystery to the next group. Yeah, mad.
Yeah, man. So, how do you feel about jellied eels and eel as a whole now?
I feel like I've learned a lot. That's for sure. I had no idea about all of this eel behaviour.
Oh.
Yeah, that's mad. Honestly, that's so mad. I don't know though. I think I do need to try them. I think just for the sake of this podcast and like having learned about it. I mean, that's the whole point of this podcast, isn't it? To kind of give ourselves and whoever's interested an appreciation, a new appreciation for things that they eat. Mm-hmm. So it's like to go and have eels now, I think it will be more interesting than as if I was just to go and have it and spit it out. I kind of know more about it now. I know the context, so maybe I do need to suck it up and try it.
The journey that eel has had to make to get into that jelly,
to get into my mouth. How weird.
Yeah,
how
man.
Strange.
So interesting though, like I had no preconception as to like what to expect from this. Like I had no idea about, I just thought that eels were still knocking around in rivers and that you just used a net to get them and they just bred
just
with
mated,
one another, just
laid
like,
eggs
and spend their whole time in the rivers and lakes. But no, man.
No, they're swimming across the world seas.
The world sea. Yeah,
being
exactly.
pulled back by a shift in the moon's fucking gravitational
pull. When this podcast when this is finished, jump on Google Maps and look at the travel.
The distance they would
have to travel from sort of around the Bahamas area to England. Mate. A long way, mate.
Because I think there's only a few animal species that make certain trips of that length. Mm. Like, I know certain bird species make massive pilgrimages across the world.
Yeah.
But I did not think that eels were one of those species.
No, neither did I.
Wow. Well, there you have it, guys. Jellied eels. I hope you guys enjoyed that episode. If you check out our feed, we've done so far, we've done stuff like peanut butter, we've done strudel, we did our first two-parter on pizza. Mm-hmm. What else have we done? We've done French toast. We've got a few now. So, and all these have got absolutely fascinating, unpredictable stories that, you know, me and Andy was really shocked about. And there's some really funny episodes. So go check those out if you enjoyed this.
Plenty more on the way as well.
Yeah.
Plenty more on the way.
Got loads in the pipeline, as they say. Mm-hmm. And we just hope you guys are enjoying these podcasts as much as we are making them. We're having a really fun time. And like I said before, we've got an email address now, which is whatthefoodpodcast@gmail.com. So feel free to like suggest episodes if you want us to delve into certain foods. Let us know.
We might be covering your favourite food next time.
Share with your friends. Share with your family. Tell your nan.
Not your nan, though. She won't like it.
Get your nan away. We don't want your nan. Share it with anyone that you think might be interested. It would mean the world to Andy and I. So there we go. All right. Well, we'll see you. We will see you next episode.
Hunting wabbits.
All right,
see
guys.
See you next time, folks.
See you later.
Bye. Ciao.